ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय,
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय,
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 6, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Ya jayet vashvamed haistang tribhir utama kalpakai tadyashaf pavanang dikshu shatamanyarivatanot. Lord Sri Krishna caused three well-performed Ashvamedha Yajnas, horse sacrifices, to be conducted by Maharaj Yudhishthira, and thus caused his, Maharaj Yudhishthira's, virtuous fame to be glorified in all directions like that of Indra, who had performed 100 such sacrifices. Purport, this is something like the preface to the performances of Ashvamedha Yajna by Maharaj Yudhishthira. The comparison of Maharaj Yudhishthira to the King of Heaven is significant. The King of Heaven is thousands and thousands of times greater than Maharaj Yudhishthira in opulence, yet the fame of Maharaj Yudhishthira was not less. The reason is that Maharaj Yudhishthira was a pure devotee of the Lord, and by his grace only was King Yudhishthira on the level of the King of Heaven, even though he performed only three yajnas, that's Ashvamedha yajnas, whereas the King of Heaven performed hundreds. That is the prerogative of the devotee of the Lord. The Lord is equal to everyone, but a devotee of the Lord is more glorified because he is always in touch with the All Great. The sun rays are equally distributed, but still there are some places which are always dark. This is not due to the sun, but due to the receptive power. Similarly, those who are 100% devotees of the Lord get the full-fledged mercy of the Lord, which is always equally distributed everywhere. I read this verse and purport from Srimad Bhagavatam for two reasons. Well, one reason is it ties in with yesterday I was speaking about Maharaj Yudhishthira's Ashvamedha Yajnas, and also it gives the point that, well, yesterday I was speaking how Yudhishthira performed these yajnas because he wanted to glorify Krishna. And in the verse that I just read now, we find that Krishna wanted Yudhishthira to perform these sacrifices because Krishna wanted to glorify Yudhishthira. So that ties in with the point I'm going to speak again on the my memories of the early days of Krishna consciousness, of my first days in Krishna consciousness in the United Kingdom. And specifically giving little memories of devotees, because I've not mentioned, but some of the devotees that I have mentioned in this two talks so far, and there should be some more. Later, after Prabhupada left, they... Well, the Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he compared the words piety and notoriety. So some of them achieved notoriety. You know what that means? It means apayash. There's yasham and apayasham. So you can become famous in the wrong way. In English it's called infamous, which literally means non-fame, but it means... Well, not literally, but etymologically it might seem like that. But apayash, it means you become well known for the wrong reasons. So that happened with some of them, but I'm not mentioning that because it's not relevant to what I'm talking about. I'm talking about how I'm grateful to the devotees as I experienced it in that time. And even it's actually unimaginable. I couldn't have imagined at that time that so many years later I'd be sitting on the edge of a river in rural Karnataka, which I'd never heard of at that time. The very word Karnataka, I'd never heard of. Heard of Gujarat. We had Gujarat and Punjab. We had Gujaratis and Punjabis in England. I never heard of Gujarat. I don't think I'd heard of Assam either. Oh yeah, Assam tea. I had no idea what Assam tea meant, that there was a place called Assam. But we did. I'm not sure if we had Assam tea. We had Ceylon tea, for all it's worth. But it's unimaginable. I'm very happy I am here because I really feel linked to Srila Prabhupada with these farm projects, even though anyone who comes in a farm project and they come in and they expect to see, just like the description of Nanda Maharaj, hundreds of thousands of cows, and they just come in and there's piles of earth here and there and a few devotees, and what is this? This is a farm project? Yeah, it's a farm project. Just like a little baby comes out of the womb and is it a human? Is it really a human? And screaming like that. Yeah, even the great personalities, the prime minister, the richest man in the world, whatever, that one time they were a screaming little baby. So we have great hopes for these projects. Anyway, I'm not talking about that at the present time. I'm talking about the devotees. We couldn't have imagined what would become of ISKCON. We did imagine that it would be taking over the world, but there's a little hiccup in between then and now. Between then and the taking over the world, or a little gastric problems or whatever. We're not able to digest Prabhupada's instructions. It's like Guru Bhojan. Guru Bhojan means heavy food, difficult to digest. So Prabhupada's instructions and his orders, they're like that Guru Bhojan. They're difficult to digest. If you can digest it, then you get great nourishment. If you can digest ghee, then the more you take, the more nourished you become. But if you can't digest it, then it just all turns to poison and you become sick. So Prabhupada gave us Guru Bhojan, Guru Vani, or heavy instructions. So we find it difficult to digest, and therefore the doctor, he will change the patya, the diet. And now we are giving laghu bhojan. But the problem is that the laghu bhojan is not guru bhojan, if you get my point. You can't, if you're going to follow a guru, you have to take guru vani. You can't take laghu vani. You can't. If you substitute it and you think, well, I can't digest that. Well, there is actually some allowance for that, and that's called varnashram. If you can't take the full heavy instructions, then you can take the lighter ones, which means varnashram is meant for everyone. And even though the chandalas are not included in the varnashram system, they actually have a service to do within. They're not part of the Varnashram society. They're not governed. Well, in one sense, they are governed by its rules. They're governed by the rule they're not allowed to come inside in the village, but they'll come to take out the dead cow. Someone has to do that. Someone has to take out the dead cows and then take the leather and use the leather. So everyone has their role to play. Anyway, it's also amazing how, if I look back, I say, at that time, it seemed to me that was the beginning of my spiritual life. And if I look back at that, then I was like a child. And you could say I'm still like a child, but there's some kind of maturity. But the young brahmacharis going out on book distribution. We really didn't have any idea of the politics and this and that, which was going on in ISKCON at that time also. But it was under control in as much as Prabhupada was there. And actually, shortly before I joined, I learned much later, there had been a lot of politics in England among the devotees over who's going to be in charge and this and that at Bhaktivedanta Manor. But from our perspective, we were all together. It might be something like in the army, the The sepoys is an English word for the, taken from Hindi, the foot soldiers or the ordinary soldiers. They don't know what the officers are, they're arguing among each other, but they just take orders, that's all. You go and march. So we didn't know what was going on. And they're, so we were all very happy. That my overwhelming impression of that time was very, very blissful. And I'm very grateful to the devotees, so I'm just recounting some of the devotees on that time. And one other thing before I get into this talk, I should say, is that it's really surprising how we all got the same Guru Vani, the same instructions from Prabhupada, and now, I was saying we all seem to be together, but now it's surprising how the same devotees with the same instructions and the same Prabhupada and the same faith in Prabhupada, or the same commitment to Prabhupada, we all have, not all, but there are very, very different outlooks on how to serve Srila Prabhupada. Very, very different. And sometimes it seems like almost irreconcilable differences. So having said all that, I'll go on with talking about the devotees. There are a couple of things about devotees who I had mentioned which have slipped into my mind, so I'll say again. I mentioned about Paradeya Prabhu. For years we called him Paradeya. We didn't know what it meant. Now, after years we got the name, Paradeya, the supreme object of meditation. Otherwise you say Paradeya. I was talking about Kaliapani. Actually it should be, pronunciation in Bengali should be Kaliapani, or in Sanskrit Kaliapani. But we pronounce it Kaliapani, and it's like that. I mean, Himavati, we used, should be Himavati. This is the river. Is it Himavati or Haimavati? Haimavati. Oh, I see. Oh, I thought you had said Himavati. So, where's the gold? Used to be gold in here. The ant stole it. You know that? The word pipilika. Do you know that word? Pipilika. It's a Sanskrit word. It refers to ants who take gold. That's the derivation. In the old descriptions of India from Greek travelers, they talk about big ants that take gold. What's all that about? No idea. But maybe you can do in your investigations, try and find out what it's all about. I sent you a link, someone had pirated that book. You saw that Shashi Tharoor's book, For All It's Worth. We could maybe, the older Gurukul children, we should give them that to read. Anyway, that's off the point. So, Hemavati River, full of gold. Oh, yeah, there's a name for Radha also. Gaurangi, Himangi. So yeah, a couple of stories that was missing. Paradeya, I mentioned him, and just something came to my mind. We were sitting in Prabhupada's room in the Berry Place temple around midday. Prabhupada's room meant when Prabhupada wasn't there, which was most of the time, we used it as a place for chanting, japa, reading, but it was a very crowded temple, so we used that space when Prabhupada wasn't here. So myself and him and one of the devotees in our movement, who I've already mentioned, he's now a sannyasi and a guru, but I'm not going to mention his name now, because we were sitting there, and there's three of us, myself, Paradeya, and the other one was chanting Gayatri, and it was a long Gayatri. So after he'd been chanting for about 20 minutes with his head down like this, Paradeya called him, said, "Hey, wake up." So he looked up, and then his head went down again. because we were pushing ourselves, just like that was expected of everyone. Just like I'd mentioned Vichy Treviria. We used to call him Vichy for short. He was fond of the motto, eat less, sleep less, distribute books more. So we all did that. We all tried to sleep as little as possible. But then sometimes, for instance, when we're sitting down to chant Gayatri, material nature caught up with us. So I said to Parijaya, please, you can't disturb him. He's chanting Gayatri. He's not chanting Gayatri. He's asleep. Bit of down-to-earth British realism there from Paradeya. Another story about sleepiness, something that I forgot. I'd mentioned Radha Krishna Prabhu. So this was the December the 31st, either 1975 or 1976, because by 1977 I was in India. So what we thought was that it should be good for book distribution, December the 31st night, because everyone's in a good mood. So we'll go out. So we'll go out, we'll take a party out for book distribution. Somehow or other we decided, we were at Bhaktivedanta Manor, and we decided to go out on book distribution. For some reason or other, decided to go to Oxford. We could have gone to Watford, which was 10 minutes drive away, but somehow or other decided to go to Oxford, which is an hour and a quarter, I don't know how much exactly time. So we went out on book distribution with the idea we'll go out and be there about 11 o'clock where the crowds are beginning to gather in public. So we went, and it was terrible for book distribution. Good people were in a good mood, they were all drunk. So it was not very good for book distribution. So anyway, we drove back. We were in a Ford Transit van, which was the standard ISKCON vehicle for many years. We went on traveling Sankirtan in them. And then the problem came, how is the driver going to stay awake as we're driving back? Because that was the normal thing. We get up at 3 o'clock, 3:30, and by evening, 9 o'clock, we were really ready for resting. But if you stay out late, it's very difficult. So anyway, it was decided that Radha Krishna's wife, whose name I don't remember, she would drive, and I was supposed to sit next in the passenger seat, which is not exactly because there's the gear shift in between and this and that, because it was thought that I would be, some or other, it was thought that I would stay awake, and everyone else went in the back, which was just a flat space, and went to sleep, which is not... Normally, British people don't do things like that, but we were, like, I think in Australia, maybe in the outback they do that. Otherwise, if you were caught in the city doing that, the cops would fine you, right? You're supposed to sit in seats and all that kind of thing. So I was supposed to stay awake, and she was driving. Okay, then, so we're driving along, and I woke up, and I looked up, and there's a tree right in front of us. I'd fallen asleep. I was supposed to stay awake to make sure she stayed awake. But she'd fallen asleep, and by Krishna's grace, I just woke up and pulled the steering wheel, and I'm here today. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been. It was a common thing, and it still seems to be fairly common. Not so much nowadays, but it's fairly common that devotees, they're tired and they drive and they crash and they die. So there's something else. Now I'm going to talk about Janananda. Now he's Janananda Goswami. From practically the first day, I remember seeing his face as he blissfully dances in kirtan, and still that's going on. His face is obviously a lot older now, but it's the same expression, the same blissful expression on his face as he dances in kirtan. Practically from the day I joined, I mean, it may be in this the same day or the second day, very soon after I joined then, I got to know him, and we bonded very well, and even though he was older by age to me, not that much, but when I'm 18 and he must have been about, I guess, 25, it is quite a big gap. But he was very humble, as today, very austere, as today. But we just got on very well, and he'd been in the movement 3 years, which means he was an older devotee. He was responsible also. He was the treasurer at Bhaktivedanta Manor, which means he handled all the pennies coming in, more pennies than pounds in those days. And he actually had a college degree, which was not that usual for devotees in those days, because most devotees, they joined before that age of finishing getting a degree, or they went to college and dropped out. And in my case, I never dropped into college. I didn't want to go to university at all. So he's very senior in that regard. He was responsible, which not that many devotees were responsible enough to be, that they could handle money or understand the importance of doing that. We were a ragged lot, that's not the word. Although I had to meet with him he loved reading Prabhupada's books out loud. So I would sit with him sometimes, he'd just call me and he'd read it very slowly out loud, and emphasizing every word and relishing that and going deeply into that with me. He always loved prasadam. He was a very good cook, and I remember one time it was common at Bhaktivedanta Manor that after the evening arati, the Mahaprasad would come out. And the puris and the sabji, and if you were around, you could get a little treat if you're lucky. So sitting on the stairs outside the temple room, and his eyes brightly shining, and saying, I don't remember exactly what he said, but he was glorifying Mahaprasad, and he'd say the words, "This is prasada." So special. Another time I was very new, I was given the service of cleaning up after prasadam in the morning, after breakfast prasad. I told you we had this every day, this semolina cooked with milk and sugar in a big pot. And that was it. No one thought to put some cardamom, elaichi, or any such thing. There wasn't much imagination. So I was given the job of cleaning up, and the pot was empty. The big pot was empty, so I took it out. I picked it up. He came in, he saw it, and said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, I'm taking out the pot. There's so much prasad." "It's empty. What are you talking about? It's empty." And then the big pot, he scraped out by hand the whole thing, and then it came to about this much bowl. It was a tiny little thing. I said, Don't throw away any prasadam. So it came to about one bowl, about as much as one devotee might get. So if you take 5 minutes to scrape it all out. So that he taught me. And then later in Malaysia, we were together, very close at that time. Just one more memory of him in that time in Mayapur. A group of us went to Mayapur in 1976, and no one told us that Mayapur's full of mosquitoes and you should take some precaution. And I just remember seeing him in the morning, and I thought he had got a big rash all over. "What's this? You got some rash?" It was mosquito bites, and we didn't know what it was, actually. How is it that you went to sleep and you woke up in the morning with all these bites? And we didn't know it was bites. We thought it was a rash. He didn't understand, and he was like that. He'd tolerate all suffering, difficulties, austerities, like that. So there's a few words about him. If I thought deeply, there may be so many things. We used to, in Malaysia especially, we went on book distribution together, and kirtans, so many things. But I'm just talking about London now. Kripa Mai Prabhu has been based at Bhaktivedanta Manor since that time. It's quite an achievement. I wonder how many others there are there since that time who are still there. I really don't know because I'm not much in contact. But as far as I know, he's never been stationed anywhere else. That's quite an achievement. I remember when I joined, on the Sunday when I first came, there were so many devotees, but then when I came to join, what happened? Where are all the devotees? There were so many. They're all out on traveling Sankirtan, all the brahmacharis, and there were, I mean, there's still quite a lot of devotees, but they're almost all grihasthas. But he was a brahmachari, and he was staying back at the temple, and he was chanting many rounds. So I asked him, how is it you're chanting all day? Chanting so many rounds, and you know, how? And then he explained that, well, I had the measles, one kind of disease, so for many days I didn't chant my rounds. So he was making them up, the missed rounds. And again, I remember, as with many devotees, I remember them in kirtan and japa, his whole tone of voice as he was chanting. Then one time I was standing out the back of a transit van, we're loading the van or something like this. And then I had lots of silly questions at the time. Now, I had stopped listening to rock music and all quite some time before I joined. I got fed up with that. But then, after I joined, we used to hear in all the classes about the mode of goodness and the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. So I didn't really understand what's it all about. So then I just mentioned to him, because I was always asking questions. So maybe just like some of the rock groups, maybe some of them are more in the mode of goodness. And I mentioned one group, he said, no, they're all completely in the mode of ignorance. It's all from hell. So that was good. And actually it is. What I thought was mode of goodness, it was actually, if I think now, is more like drug-induced music. I was thinking of Pink Floyd, but you don't know what that is. Lucky for you. One of the traveling Sangitam parties I was on with him, Raghubir was leading it, Gokulananda, and then Kripamoy was there. I think many times I told that story. We were in Northern Ireland, we were staying in a house, in one apartment in a house in Belfast, the capital of Northern Ireland. In the middle of the night, we heard all this noise. There were five of us sleeping on the floor. It was an unfurnished apartment. We just went there to sleep, that's all. Some Indian man owned it and he let us use it. So we were just all asleep and there was all this noise and shouting, and the others didn't woke up. I woke up. And then I went out, and the upper apartment was on fire, and the fire brigade was there and there was all smoke everywhere. I looked out and then someone said, oh, it's all right, it's under control, the fire, it's all right. So I came back. And then the only one who woke up was Raghubir, and he said, what's going on? I said, oh, the house is on fire. He says, is it under control? Yes, and he went back to sleep. That's all, devotees were detached. The others didn't wake up at all. They were screaming and this and that. So you can see devotees were quite detached. But they're also, when we slept, we really slept in those days, because we didn't sleep much. And like I said, when I sent out a joke a few years ago, it was because there was some debate going on the email, how much sleep should devotees get? Because Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada, if you take more than 6 hours sleep, you're in the mode of ignorance. And in another place he says 6 or 7. And there was some discussion going on. And I wrote a comment that, well, all our devotees, they get a good 9 hours sleep. They get 6 hours in 6 hours at night, 2 hours in the japa period, and 1 hour in Srimad Bhagavatam class. I remember Hare Krishna telling, I'll talk about Hare Krishna a little later. He said he was in a class once with, I don't know if he was just joking, because he was always joking, but it is quite possible that everyone in the class had fallen asleep, and then they all woke up when the speaker, he fell asleep, and then his head went into the mic, boom. And then everyone, it's quite possible. You never know. Those were innocent days. There was the struggle against the three modes of material nature, and then the struggle just to stay awake. Vanshivadana, as we used to call him, although it should be actually Vanshivadana, but we used to call Vanshivadana. We didn't have any idea how to pronounce anything. So we were on traveling Sankirtan together for quite some time. Must have been one summer. They put all the top book distributors, with the exception of Satyavak, for some reason he wasn't sent. We were sent to Ireland because it was the best spot. Ireland was easier. If you go to Ireland, you'll distribute more books, whoever you are. So if you send the best men, then they'll get the best benefit out of it. Like that. So we all went. There was myself, Tiger Tony, as he was called. His name was Tony. Later he was initiated as Navanita Chora. And Dharani Dhara, Amita was leading the party. And as far as I remember, Tulsi Priya was there also. He wasn't such a great book distributor in terms of numbers, but he was Irish. We had a token Irishman with us. So Vanshivadan, and it was a good competition between us also, because we were all good distributors. With the Dharani Dara wasn't so good. We made him the treasurer. One day he ran away with the money. Things like that happened. 1 week's collection. Yes, it wasn't all bliss, because one evening we all came back, and where is he? And then we realized he wasn't coming, and the money was gone also. Like I say, these things happen. So Vanshivadana, a very sweet personality. He was always a little ahead of me, and I was always on his case. I was on his case and Amita's case, because they were frivolous talk, what I saw as frivolous talk. With Amita, I couldn't get on his case so much because he was a bit of a hairy character, but Vanshivadana was a very sweet character, so I could get on his case more. So sorry, I don't... But very, his method is to distributing books is also very, he talked to people very nicely, and they'd be charmed and take books. One Gaur Purnima, that must have been 1977, myself, Vanshivadan, and Dandakaranya, the three of us, we decided a few days before Gaur Purnima, let's cook 108 preparations. And then we decided between us what we'll do. And we started 3 days in advance, cooking some preparations that would keep nicely. And then the last night before as far as I remember, I stayed up almost all. We chanted 16 rounds. We went to Mangalad and we were in the kitchen. So that was a very, very blissful Gaur Purnima. We didn't, on the day also, we just went on cooking more and more preparations. Just, that was, I cooked many varieties of chutney, I remember that, because that would keep also nicely. some chutney. So we had a very bliss. That was very blissful. I used to cook. Daily I would cook, actually, and then for feasts and everything. So that was a very good experience, I remember, with him. Now, there are quite a few devotees whose I really don't remember much about them. I just remember they were there, and their names and their faces, and not much else. And I don't know what happened to many of them later on. Rasa Rasik, I remember his japa. He was very simple, heavy set, and he would chant japa very slowly. It would take him a long time to chant. Just one thing I remember with him, when I was very new, just I was feeling very happy and something popped into my head, some silly Kami song, which I didn't even think about. I just sang. He said, well, in a very polite British way, he said, well, I don't think that should be sung here. That's all. Ragadvaha, he still lives close to the manor. Divyang, I don't remember. Jagadbandhu. Jagadbandhu was black-bodied. We didn't have so many black. In fact, I think he was the only black. Means West Indian, like that. It's the only one I can remember at the time. Indians, there are a few. Brishaba, again, I remember the face. Rasamandala, yeah, I remember him, and he's still around. He's not just around, but he's quite a prominent devotee. With Indriyesh, his brother. Sarvasagara, Turkish, quite a character. His methods of book distribution, he'd just completely overwhelm people. Especially he'd go up to the girls and look right in their eyes and get their money out of them. Prithvipati, I don't remember much about him except that he was there. Yagyanga, Ankota, we used to go on book distribution in London. Tall, Sikh. What else do I remember? Not much about him. He went to America. Gornitai, there are a whole group of devotees came down from, I believe it was Hamilton in Scotland. They came and joined at the manor. They all got initiated by Prabhupada, of course, and then they all went off to America, and they are still all devotees in America. There was Gornitai, Indranuj, Punyatama, we used to call him, and then actually it should be Punyatma, but we used to call him Punyatama. And there were a few others also. And Gornitai, he was married. Atna, Keshidaman. Keshidaman's been living in Vrindavan for years. Do you know him? He gives classes regularly there. He's published some important books, yeah. But I don't remember much of them at the time. I remember Keshidaman was just like now, he has this quite humorous, dry British humor. Adikata Prabhu. I used to go on book distribution with him a lot, and he still does book distribution. He's one of the great figures of book distribution, all-time greats. He was older than most of us. He'd been a photographer, which means he had a steady, respectable job, which most of us didn't before we joined. And he, again, I remember him in Kirtan, and he still loves Kirtan. Very sober person. Excellent in distributing books. He would talk to people in such a way that, see, many of us would distribute books practically by harassing people, really, but he would distribute books in a very he won people's confidence by his gravity. People were impressed by that. So one summer, I guess, which was that? It must have been 76, something like that, although it doesn't really matter that much now. The two of us, we would go out every day, just going out from Berry Place on Oxford Street, which is packed with tourists throughout the year, but especially in the summer. And we were selling Bhagavad Gitas, hardbound, abridged Bhagavad Gitas, which hardly anyone sold because it was difficult to sell them. And we'd do each 20, 25 a day, sell them for £2, £2.50, something like that. We'd actually sell them. It's not like passing out magazines where you just, in 2 seconds, you just get someone to give a donation. So just the two of us, we were doing that. And it wasn't easy. I remember being told that years ago, devotees in America, they'd discovered how to sell big books in America, and they thought they'd come over to England. Vichitavirya told me that devotees had come over to England, and they said, now we'll teach the English devotees how to sell big books. But they couldn't do it in England. It didn't work. The mentality of the people was different. So cracking the selling big books, it was a difficult thing. Myself and Adi Kata, we did it, but not much to English people. We could recognize Swedish people and Norwegian. We could recognize Scandinavian just by looking at them. We could understand. And something amazing happened that whole summer. Myself and Adi Karta Prabhu, we would approach people and say, you're from, and we'd tell them the country. You're from such and such a country. You're a teacher, aren't you? Or whatever. And somehow or other, we just, by meeting them, means by Krishna Paramatma, we just know so many things about them, and they were just astonished. And then they'd take the book. Krishna empowered in that way. In Northern Ireland also, I was with Adi Kata, maybe one or two other devotees. Oh, that's Sankirtan in Northern Ireland. I should mention something about that. It was even mentioned in the Back to Godhead magazine that we went one day to Coleraine. That was myself. I was with Raghubir Gokulananda Kripamoy. We went to Coleraine, which is a small town. I think it's about 10,000 population, something like that. In India, you'd call that a village, but in England, or in Northern Ireland especially, that's a small town. 10,000, maybe 20,000, had a university. And it was snowing, quite heavily snowing all day long. And there weren't many people on the streets, you could imagine, if it's snowing. But everyone we stopped took a Back to Godhead magazine. By the end of the day, we had distributed almost 1,000 between us. It was amazing. That was one good experience in Northern Ireland. So another time I was in Northern Ireland with Adi Kata Prabhu, and we were distributing again these, maybe that was when the main tourist time finished in London, and then we went to Northern Ireland. We didn't do Southern Ireland because we wanted to do big books. And Southern Ireland, generally people don't have enough, they didn't have enough money at the time. In Northern Ireland, people had more money. And he was great. He'd always sell more books than me. I'd sell quite a few, but he would always sell more Bhagavad Gitas than me. And I remember just one time, we were just, someone just stopped in the car next to him and he banged on the window. And the guy rolled down the window and just showed him the book and took a donation and like that. It was just empowered to sell books. Oh, another thing when traveling Sankirtan in Northern Ireland, we were in these Ford Transit vans, and we'd usually park outside any city. City, I mean, there's only one city really, is Belfast, but we'd park outside any town. Because if we stayed in the town, then either the police or the army, police means Royal Ulster Constabulary, they'd come and wake us up in the night, because that was, the troubles were going on. There was a lot of communal violence going on. remember driving through Northern Ireland. We were thinking we'll stop in this town. We drove through it. There's probably nothing in the town left. Most of it was all just bombed out buildings. I told that story many times. We came into Belfast once and we drove around in the one evening and we looked around. We thought, okay, tomorrow morning we'll come and do book distribution outside Woolworths. We came next morning to Woolworths. It's a big department store. There was no Woolworths. There was just some smoke. That's all. The place had been bombed in the night. And when you're doing book distribution, you're just talking to people, selling them books, and hear some sound. And no one... I was selling a book, and I heard this big boom. I said, "What's that?" to the woman I was selling a book. I said, "Mom." Like that. So we would park mostly in the country. One evening... We came in, because the nights go on till quite late at night in the Northern Hemisphere, so it must have been about 9 o'clock or so. We just parked in some field, and then some young boys, about 12 years old, came and said, "What are you doing?" Like this. I said, well, we're monks and we're staying here. We're just staying all night. And then they came back about 20 minutes later with a whole bunch of sandwiches and everything that they went and told their parents there were some monks. And they came, of course, they all meat sandwiches and this and that, but that spirit was there. And even in the country sometimes, or quite often actually, either the police or more often in the country, the army boys. Boys means they weren't much, they were about the same age as us actually. They were kids like us. They would come and bang, bang, bang. They'd shine the torchlights. And then, "What are you doing?" Because they're suspecting we're some terrorist. Terrorist means IRA, Irish Republican Army. So then we'd explain and what we're doing, and we're distributing these books, and we sleep. And they were very impressed, actually. Every time they're very impressed. They're doing some good thing, and they're very... austere, and they're doing it in this situation where there's fighting going on, and sometimes we'd see them off duty and we'd sell books to them, but they didn't come out. If you see a soldier off duty, you know they stand out from everyone else, their whole bhav is different, but they mostly didn't come outside their barracks. It was dangerous, very dangerous for them, the soldiers. There were a lot of people in, means one third of the population at that time would rather see them dead than alive. Literally. So there, priest. So that was... Adhikata Prabhu, up to the present day, he goes out on book distribution. Just a great personality of ISKCON. Just some memory... some small thing. Midday on Oxford Street, there was, in between all the shops, there were some doorways which went, then you go inside and there are some steps and it goes to some apartments. So we used to, around midday, we'd stop, go in one of those places and just sit down and chant Gayatri. Just take a few minutes break to chant Gayatri. And then someone, one of the residents there came and said, "What are you doing?" He's in the middle of chanting Gayatri. I wasn't going to say anything because I was saying, chanting Gayatri, I can't say anything. But he said, he explained. And then when he spoke, the way he spoke to people, they would immediately be reassured that he's, of course we're in kami clothes and everything, but just the way he spoke very soberly, and people would immediately be reassured. It's everything. He just said, "We're just taking a few minutes break. That's all." He didn't really explain anything, but just the way he said it, and just people became completely reassured. One time at the manor, I saw he was chanting many rounds. I said, "Hey, what are you chanting so many rounds for? Why don't you go on book distribution?" He said, "Oh, I'm chanting 50 rounds." I said, "Well." He said, "I'll explain later." I didn't know at the time that you're supposed to chant 50 rounds before you try for a child. So he was married to Ruchira, and they're very, very good, both husband and wife, very, very, very good devotees up to the present day. Actually, Ruchira's first husband, she was initiated, and as far as I know, her husband was initiated, I think it was her husband was initiated the same day as myself and Satyavak and Paradeya. And then, I believe, the same day he was initiated, he was never seen again. I believe it was him. And then she again married to Adhikata Prabhu. Kulashekhar, the first English devotee, not the first British devotee. There's a difference. Do you know the difference? Britain consists of England, Scotland, Wales, and, well, that's Great Britain. And then the United Kingdom, this is some geography lesson, if you like. Britain, England, and the United Kingdom are not the same. England is one land, and England, Wales, and Scotland combined are called Great Britain. It's one island. And then the United Kingdom means it's called the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, because Northern Ireland is part of the British Isles, but it's not part of Great Britain. So now you got confused. And then there's a country called Ireland, and that's also separate. It's part of the British Isles, but it's not part of the United Kingdom. So anyway, what was I talking about? Oh yeah, the first British devotee was Dhananjay Prabhu from Scotland. And the first English devotee was Kulashekhar. Now you understood. Although I didn't see him much. He wasn't living in England much at that time. Sometimes he came over once he was staying in Paris at the time, and he said, "Oh, in Paris we have 5 classes a day." And I mean, "Really? Oh, I want to join." He said, "Blah, blah, 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 you better not." He was afraid that he was going to start an exodus of devotees because they were saying they're having 5 classes a day. I said, "Really? I want to have 5 classes a day." So he discouraged me from that. Again, very, very unique and blissful faith in Kirtan. I remember him talking about, because he joined quite early, and then he got quite a lot of association with Prabhupada when Prabhupada was in England. And then he mentioned about how he remembered, and he wasn't the only one, but especially the early day devotees would say things that Prabhupada, he would just sometimes manifest a mood just like he was a cowherd boy. It's like Prabhupada would be transported to Vrindavan directly. One time I cooked preparation for Radha Gokulananda Bhaktivedanta Mana. Preparation I used to cook a lot. We used to call it caramel, which we'd boil milk down a lot with a lot of putting sugar in before we started to boil it, and then the sugar would become brownish in color and have a different kind of flavor. And sometimes I added ghee to make it even richer. So one time I put a lot of ghee so that there was the milk layer, it's very thick milk, and on top of that there was a layer of ghee. Then afterwards he took some of that Mahaprasad and he really got on my case. He was really heavy with me. He said, "You're going to make Radha Gokulananda sick by giving such rich food." I was shocked. But anyway, I was all right. I just remember that. And then Bhumadev Prabhu was I mentioned him before, he did the drum. Very sweet, very very good English gentlemanly type. Then Kulashekhar went away and he said to me, "It's all right, don't worry, don't get upset." Because he thought I might break down or something under the heavy chastisement from Kulashekhar. Okay. There's a few things. So I'll just... Oh. No, I think I'll leave it there now. Just I'll mention a few more names. I don't remember much about them. Bhagavad Bhakta, I don't remember much about him, except that he was, again, from more English-like, high-class background. He was quite a character. He would argue a lot with everyone, but in a good-natured way. He really liked the idea of cow protection and bullock carts and this and that. I have no idea what happened to him. I haven't seen or heard of him for years. Veerabhadra was very laid-back and relaxed kind of devotee, and he was appointed to be the guest manager of Bhaktivedanta Manor, which he did very well, because he would welcome people in and sit them down and make them feel comfortable. Because it was noticed that so people would come to the manor and they'd walk in, they'd look around and walk out, and no one even spoke to them. So that was his service. All day he'd just greet guests, sit them down, make them feel comfortable, give them a little prasadam, like that. Bhajanananda, haven't seen him for a long time. Bhuvaneshwar, he joined, I believe he was Irish, yeah. He joined, he was very enthusiastic on book distribution, and then blooped. All happened in a short time. Joined, got initiated, did a lot of books, and gone again. Such things happened. Karabhajana, Scottish. He just went crazy one day. That's all. Just went crazy. I suppose many of the devotees, they were previously taking drugs, so for them to go crazy was not so unusual. So, okay, I'll finish there. You'd like to ask anything? It's very, very different to what it is now. The whole mood, and we were so young and raw. We didn't know much about Krishna consciousness. Maybe in some ways we knew more, because the mood was just surrender, that's all. Not unsophisticated, you could say, very unsophisticated. Lot of faith in Prabhupada. That's all.
What was the inspiration for you? You said that kirtans were very...
The kirtans were very blissful. Yeah, every kirtan. I can tell you one thing, Shruta Dev, he was our Tamil president at one point, from America. After Vichy in Berry Place, was it Shruta Dev came next? I'm not sure. But he was there for some time. So the temple room was so small, and there were so many devotees, so Radha, Landa, and Isra were just standing just only about this high, and there was a little chain in front of them, or bar, and you'd come so close to the deities, you could almost shake hands with Krishna. And there's just enough space for the pujari to offer the aarti. There's Krishna, then the pujari, and then there's all the devotees all squeezed in there. So I was leading the Mangalarti kirtan one time. Oh, I mentioned about Kripa Moy. He's a famous kirtaneer in England. He's famous. I remember the first time he chanted the Mangalarti kirtan. He must have done it hundreds and thousands of times since then. And afterwards, Prabhu Vishnu, I'm not talking about Prabhu Vishnu, because I spoke about him a long time. I gave a whole memory of him at one point. I don't know if it's on the website or not, but I spoke about him. So he wasn't the town president at that time. He had been previously, but he was respected by everyone as the senior. So after it was over, because naturally Creedmore was nervous, and he said to Creedmore, good, you did well. Just you forgot one verse. And Creedmore said, yeah, I realized afterwards. He forgot one. He left out one verse the first time he sang it. So anyway, one time I was leading the Mongol Arti Kirtan, and Shrutadev, who was the Tema president, was offering the Arti. I was standing right next to him as he was offering the Arti. And I was singing the Hare Krishna mantra. He turned around and don't sing that tune. That's the wrong tune. Sing the morning tune. I didn't know anything about it. No one had ever told me there's a proper tune. That was a lot of the training, actually. People wouldn't tell us what you should do, but when you did something wrong, they'd let you know. No, there was no training what you should do right, but if you did it wrong, then you'd find out. That was the method. In Berry Place, there was the mustard oil, which was sold in the Indian shops, and English people had never heard of mustard oil. And the idea of putting oil on your body for bathing was absolutely unimaginable in English culture. So I saw all the devotees were doing that, and then, so I did also. The only thing is, I put it on after bathing. Something like Jar Bharat, you take a bath and then you pass stool. And Narendra was there. He big, heavy guy. I think he was a Hell's Angel or something before. Only a fool would put mustard oil on after bathing. I said, really put it on? I couldn't work it out. If you put it on before, then it all washes off, doesn't it? Didn't seem to make sense to me. So what were you talking about? The kirtans. So then I learned that Prabhupada had said we should sing in a particular tune, not just any tune that comes to your mind. Shrutadev taught me that. As he was offering the arati, he stopped to chastise me in the middle. He was a town president also. What was blissful about the kirtans? Well, when there's a surrendered mood and you're working very hard for Krishna and pushing yourself, especially there was some risk there. There was not a risk of losing our lives or anything like that, but any time you're out on the street, we are liable to be arrested. That was there. Just for being devotees. Especially when one time we went on a Harinam, we were going on a Harinam, I believe it was on Balaram's appearance day. We used to have big feasts and then go out on Harinam Sankirtan. Otherwise, on festival days especially, like Balaram's appearance day, we'd go on Harinam Sankirtan. We had these fabulous feasts. Kulangana was cooking, famous. Fabulous feasts. And then, on the Sunday feasts, we didn't go out because there weren't many people out. And then we'd all stagger up the stairs and collapse after a week of pushing ourselves on book distribution. We take the Sunday feast and crash out, as we used to say. And then I asked Vichitavirya once, he was town president, after the feast, everyone just goes to sleep. So why did Prabhupada allow us to have these feasts, Sunday feasts? And Vichitavirya said that if he didn't, we'd all bloop. That was his on-the-spot reply. So the kirtans, yeah, they were very blissful, and then that's all we knew. We didn't know anything about. There was no such thing as a boring kirtan or a kirtan where you really wish it was over and you've got something better to do. There was no such thing. Kirtan means dance and chant and sing, and everyone's into it. At least that's how I remember it. It may be that I'm over idealizing it in my memory or something like that. That's how I remember it. How did I develop a desire to come and stay in India? Well, believe it or not, I was getting sick a lot in the West, with physical problems. My body became very stiff and painful, arthritic pain at a young age, which is not surprising seeing as we used to go on traveling Sankirtan and we would stay in these vans overnight with no heating. We'd sleep on the books because there's nowhere else to sleep. And then we'd keep water in these plastic canisters. And the temperature was generally just it was a cold winter, but it was, every winter in England is cold, but it was just above freezing. But actually on the street, because there was we were in eastern England a lot, and the wind would come in from the North Sea. So with the wind effect, it was extremely cold. So we were in the cold 24 hours a day. We'd bathe with cold water. We'd eat, because we didn't want to waste time cooking, so we'd eat dried fruit, which is the worst, which in a cold weather, you just eat uncooked food. And dried fruit is the worst thing for this vata dosha. So I became such, I couldn't move actually. It was very difficult for me to move. And then at one time I got, I still want to do book distribution, so they arranged a wheelchair for me and I go out on a wheelchair. It was good actually, because people would like to give donations to someone in a wheelchair. So I thought, I need a warm climate. I have to go for a warm climate. I have to get out of this cold. Then I thought, okay, where will I go? Then I thought South Africa is one place. But then I thought India for two reasons. Actually, three reasons. Because I'd heard in India, Prabhupada spends a lot of time there. I could get some association of Prabhupada. Another thing, one devotee came through and they're talking about they'd been on the BBT library party in India. And they said, you go around and you sell sets of books, standing orders in the colleges. I thought, hey, great, I want to do that. That was my idea for doing that. And then the other thing, I thought that if I stay in a Western country, I'll probably end up marrying, like everyone else does. So I don't want to get married. So I thought better to go to India because I heard it's much better for brahmachari life. That time I had no idea of accepting sannyas. So that's why I chose to come to India. And then, but so then I was supposed to raise the money, but then I couldn't raise the money because I couldn't function properly. If I stayed in the temple, then I could do some service. But if I went on book distribution, carrying a bag with heavy books and this and that, it was very difficult for me. So I could only go out for 1 or 2 days in a week. And then, so there was some devotee visiting from India, Matunga was his name. He was an American devotee. Devotees often came from India to Britain to get a new visa for India. Prabhupada was very upset with the Indian government, they should give us proper visas. Because people, they can only come for 6 months at a time, they have to spend so much money going away, their service is interrupted. So Matunga, he helped, and then he raised money for me to go. And it was actually what happened. Trivikram Swami came. He was based in Delhi. So I asked him about staying in India and he agreed. Yeah, it's a good idea. Then I asked my GBC, who was Jayatirtha, who I'd like to speak about more. Maybe in the next class. And then they all agreed I could go because they could see that I was doing service in that very place temple, but I was frustrated because I was young and I had energy and I wanted to get out on book distribution. So I thought in a warmer climate, then my body will function better. So Jayatirtha, I'll speak about him next time, Krishna willing. He agreed and so I went with Trivikram Swami, who doesn't remember that I went to, when I first went to India with him. I think last time I met him, I said, oh, he doesn't remember. It's a big thing for me. I often say that the best thing that happened to me in millions of lifetimes was to come to the shelter of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, and the next best thing in this lifetime was coming to India. in so many ways, because in England, shortly after I left, after Prabhupada left, there was so much disturbance in the movement. Many devotees, they just left the movement altogether, or if you want to be more frank, they were driven out. So, I don't know what my fate would have been. There was a lot of controversy just after Prabhupada left, but I was saved from a lot of that. I was in Bangladesh, and we didn't know what was going on, hardly. There wasn't much communication with the outside world. So, anyway, it wasn't that I thought Indian culture, I want to find out about it and this and that. No, it was just practical decision for how I could continue my service. That's all. At that time, it was thought that whoever goes to India, they're all useless people. We send all the useless people to India. Because Prabhupada wanted Western devotees, he'd tell the Tamil presidents to send the devotees from the West to come in India. So they'd send all the ones who didn't get up in the morning, who were always arguing with the authorities, who couldn't do much of anything, not very good in service. They'd all, so it was, to be in India was considered a disqualification. Although, of course, Prabhupada himself kept some of his very best men in India. Even most of them didn't stay. It was very difficult in many ways also in those early days. Yeah, the movement's changed a lot. So now the next change is the farm communities. That's the next wave. We pray, we hope. We're making a little start in India. We really, really need it in the West, but there's not much consciousness of that at all. I'm thinking also I should spend many times, whenever I go to the West, I think I should just stay there because there's so much work to do there. But my main thing is writing. At least the books can be there. I just wrote one paragraph for the introduction of my mood and mission book. You might think, why after so many years am I writing the introduction? Well, that's the way I write. It doesn't come out. I might write the end at the beginning and the beginning at the end. The introduction I already wrote, but it's just an extra paragraph. Because I wrote that something to this effect, that this is the first part of the first volume. Originally, I'd intended to do the first volume of the Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada in one book, but it just became too big. So I'm going to do it in two volumes. And then the second volume, I intend to cover topics of what Prabhupada's desires for the management of ISKCON, his thoughts about the future of ISKCON, something about the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, and a few other topics. And then I wrote that I have hundreds of pages of notes for other volumes. See, there's volume one, part one, volume one, part two, and then it's supposed to be volume two and volume three. And there, so the idea I wrote, I have hundreds of pages of notes for future volumes to discuss various issues concerning Srila Prabhupada's personality and some of the controversies within ISKCON. But I don't know if these books will manifest at all, because I'm more toward the end of this life than the beginning, and various health difficulties are there, and I've got other important things to write also. So I don't know if those books will manifest, but the notes are there, and maybe in future someone could just take the notes and organize them and make some kind of a book. There are many important things to write. Speaking's easier than writing. Actually, I'd like to write hundreds of books, but where's the possibility? But speaking different subjects, at least some subjects get touched on. That's all. Pancha kalpa tarubhyas charkipa sindhubhya vichapatitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.